The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Cerevich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
This is episode 37 of A Pod of Their Own, which we're never allowed to do again, as Linda and I were just discussing pre-show. We are never allowed to say that it's going to be a quiet podcast or a quiet off-season or anything like
no,
that.
No.
Nope.
Because we were saying,
that's
you know,
off the table.
There's not much going on. We're just going to have a short pod this week. It'll be chill. You know, the day that we're recording, the bomb drops. That billionaire Steve Cohen, who had been in negotiations with the Wilpons to purchase the Mets, is no longer going to do so, it seems. It's not like officially dead, because the parties themselves have not said it, because they had just issued a statement basically saying, like, we have a non-disclosure agreement, so we're not allowed to say anything about this. But
Steve Cohen canceled his opening day party. I think that's all we need to know.
Yeah. Steve Cohen canceled
his opening day gala.
Yeah. And sources familiar with the talks on both sides say, you know, this is pretty much dead in the water and Cohen is walking away. And of course, the reason why Cohen is walking away is because, and I'm quoting from the New York Post article here, the story broke. The Wilpons pushed late to maintain some control of the franchise beyond the 5-year window.
Oh, jeez.
I don't understand. This is what drives me crazy. All their dirty laundry has been aired. Like, there was no holds barred when they sold. Like, all the articles started coming out. What leg do they have to stand on to do this? We know you're broke. We know everybody hates Jeff Wilpon. And you just screwed up a $2.6 billion deal. And they're like, eh, we just wanted to stay after 5 years. But oh well. Like, how is this okay?
How entitled do you have to be, too, to be like, okay, I'm selling you this thing, but I still want it. Like, okay, I'm selling you my house. You're going to live here now. But
they're squatters.
It only works if I can come visit, like, pretty regularly for a long, long time. Like, who does that? Who thinks that that's a thing? It doesn't.
The ego on
do.
Them.
I mean, they're ones. Yeah. No, I mean, it's.
There's no shame here. None.
This is, you know, and this is like Steve Cohen of all people. Like, you have to be pretty sleazy to out-sleaze Steve Cohen. I mean, my God.
Right.
But also, did they really think they could get, like, one-up him? Like, they're not in the same... The playing field is very different for the two of them.
Yeah, and it's like, you know that you're, like, impossible to work with when the king of insider trading doesn't want to deal with you. Like...
yeah.
I can't...
And also just raises the question, like... We know that they're really unstable financially. That was
yes.
Why they were going to sell. Like, that part has now been widely acknowledged, whereas before they were able to sort of fake it, at least publicly. And so the question is, like, if this falls through, how long is their leash? Because, you know, I mean, MLB obviously is going way out of their way to not force the Wilpons to sell, but eventually, I mean, Frank McCourt had to sell. Like, that was, he was like, you know, about to start writing bad checks was the, and nothing that I saw suggested that the Wilpons were not going to get there soon. Right. So, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like if you're killing this deal over, like, I want to, you know, say who's going to be in the lineup or whatever. If you're killing this deal, that does not mean that a worse one will not be forced upon you in like a year.
Now, yeah. Like, how do you walk away from $2.6 billion? I can't wrap my head around this.
These people live on a different plane of existence than you and me, Linda. Like, it's just
true.
Different level of existence. But, like, I don't claim to be a business expert. I have never, you know, done a business. I'm not a businesswoman. But my basic understanding of how business works is that you don't get to ask for more stuff when you're not the one with the leverage.
Like, no. And especially, they had to have seen all the bad press that came out about them. We know you're broke. There's no hiding it anymore. So, what do they think is going to happen?
I think they probably figure they can tread water until the absolutely ass backwards Cuomo-led LaGuardia shuttle thing takes off that will drive a lot of that will drive a lot of like real estate interest to all the area where they own real estate. I think they're hoping that that will happen in the next few years and they can sort of like bide their time, but it's not gonna happen in the next few years, and I don't know that they could hold on that long. Oh, God, is he ever? Like, geez, just come on, man.
No, he's the light, on
it's right there.
Our hate and spite fuels them. They're never going.
It's, so, but I mean, honestly, 100%, that is what I truly believe is behind their reticence to sell. I think if, like, they didn't feel like they could just get this next big take, then they would be selling. But no, they feel like they can just eke it out, and they can't. Not going to happen. But, you know, I know? I'm not a business person either, so.
But like we said, baseball has no interest in changing anything, so they really have nothing to lose, I guess. I guess losing a $2.6 billion deal is nothing. I don't know. Because I feel like I've said, maybe that does mean nothing to them, but to me, I would take that and get the hell out.
Well, of course, we have to remember when we say things like the Wilpons are broke, they are living the lives of extremely wealthy people will almost certainly end any kind of scenario continuing to live the lives of extremely wealthy people. Like, none of this will actually change their lifestyle. They will live in the huge houses with people to clean them and fancy cars. Like, that's, and I think that's part of it. That's why they can say goodbye to $2.6 billion, because their experience of their lives won't be better or worse without it. And that's really sick. I mean, that's the gross thing about this kind of wealth, is that you could just be like, nah, I don't need your $2.6 billion. I have enough.
Yeah. It's not like we're getting Schitt's Creek Wilpon edition here. Like, that's not what's going to go down. Like, I tweeted about this, and basically what I said was, and I mean, we talked extensively on this show about Steve Cohen, and everybody who listens to this show knows that we weren't necessarily thrilled about the ethics of him being the owner of our baseball team, am I heartbroken?
Yeah, also definitely evil.
Yeah. Am I heartbroken that this ghoulish ultra billionaire is gonna no longer own my baseball team? No, not really. But I'm just so like tired of the Mets being a laughingstock all the time. We should be used to it by now as Mets fans, but like between like the Carlos Beltran thing and this, like in a single off season, it just like it's reached peak capacity, Mets, and I'm kind of overwhelmed now.
It's just, it wears on you. Just be the normal functioning baseball team for 2 minutes. Can you try to do that?
Be normal for 2 minutes.
We couldn't even go a whole off season without being an epic disaster. Like, every single scandal, every single thing that can go wrong, somehow they get wrapped up in. Whether it's their fault or not, it's like, this is just peak Mets. Like, we're a crisis level Mets here.
Crisis level Mets.
And it's not even baseball. It's just boring, stupid money stuff. Like,
yeah.
Why do I have to be mad about that? It doesn't hit dingers.
Yeah.
I want to get mad about the stuff where there's baseball. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's also this. And this is, I feel like, because the Mets are incapable of going very long without Metsing, every offseason, there's always this point where I'm like, if they don't start throwing a damn ball, I'm going to lose my freaking mind. And I'm definitely right there. I need my hourly influx of Jacob DeGrom's hair in the Florida sunlight. Like, that's, I desperately, desperately need like some suns out, guns out shot from Pete Alonso, just to remind me that like, there's good stuff in baseball, because this is the part where we haven't had the good stuff in a while. Like,
no,
we are very far removed from actual baseball being played, and I'm desperate for it, because it's the only thing that keeps us in this stupid game. We're not in it, you know, for,
yeah, we're not cheering for the owners here.
Yeah, we're not looking to, you know, make the next one $2.7 billion. Like, that's not, you know, our rooting interest. And it's just, it's real hard when all of this shit is coming down and we don't have the actual baseball to keep the good feelings going.
You mean to tell me an inning that you're not excited to fly your first base depth pennant? Maggie, come on.
Ugh.
Mets are kings of first base depth.
I mean, to be fair, they do have some really, really nice first base depth.
They do.
Like, but what an odd statement to have to say out loud. Like, what a ludicrous.
Yeah.
What a ludicrous thing to be even thinking about.
It would have been even better if they had signed Wilmer Flores, which I argue.
Instead, they signed Matt Adams to an NRI, which is like, again, like,
it's fine.
I feel like I say this all the time. I feel like a freaking broken record, but like, Matt Adams on paper is a fine NRI to have. Like, Matt Adams is, you know, a solid baseball player.
And to
has
be
been...
fair,
I was a little surprised even that he didn't get a major league deal. Like,
right. I was going to say, to be fair, we've come a long way from guaranteeing them, like Adrian Gonzalez.
Oh, God.
So this was a step up from that. They kind of learned that lesson.
Only because they have two first basemen already.
Well,
I mean, three if you count J.D. Davis, which probably should. I've seen him at third.
And 3.25 if you count Jed Lowry.
Yeah, I was going to say it may be McNeil.
I don't know.
I'm sure McNeil could play there.
He could probably play just about anywhere, but let's not.
No, let's not push it, please.
But like, yeah, like, fine NRI, cool. Why does that make sense for this roster whatsoever?
I mean, it makes sense if they're really quite close to trading Dom Smith, which,
yeah.
And granted, like, the Mets have kind of always balanced, like, leaking every possible thing and then just also coming out of left field with a bizarre deal that we didn't hear coming. So, like, on the one hand, I was like, well, maybe they're trading Dom Smith. We haven't heard anything. But, you know, it's also the kind of weird trade that they could, like, drop 2 weeks from now that nobody had any buzz on whatsoever. So
yeah, like, we'll see. J.D. Davis kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like that would just kind of, yeah, it was like on a random day in January, like, oh, we got J.D. Davis for no reason. But I'm not going to complain now. He showed us all. When you said trading Dom made me think of Brody. And somebody in Slack said this. I can't remember who. I'm sorry. But they said a month ago or so that Brody was afraid to make a decision about the manager because he was thinking about Cohen. So they were planning for their future.
Yeah.
With Cullen in mind. Woof. So where does this leave us?
Well, it was such, I mean, a 5-year transition plan just is such a messy thing to begin with. I'm not saying like we all should have looked back and known that it would fall apart per se, but that probably should have been an indication that like this was not going to be a simple process. I mean, it never is for the Mets, but like that was certainly a nice bright red warning sign.
Another warning sign, like along with the fact that they've literally done this before, like with Einhorn.
Yeah, right.
Like, I guess we should have known.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. And that was certainly like, that was a time when, especially in retrospect, like they were really on life support financially. Mm-hmm. So, like.
But baseball also bailed them out at that point, too.
Yeah, that was still Bud Selig, though, who was, like, actually buddy-buddies with Fred, whereas I think Manfred, like, will support them because that is literally his only job. Just a reminder, the MLB commissioner's only job is to support owners, and that is it. But, like, I don't think he has any special, affection for the world. I can't even. It's, whatever feelings Bud Selig had towards the Wilpons is, I don't know that that is shared by these people. Why do I keep having to say these names?
Yeah, it just tastes gross in your mouth. That's why I'm washing this whole podcast down
so
with
we'll
the beers.
See. So we'll see.
Yeah, this is one of those you podcasts where I have to drink beer just to like get through it because I'm like, why are the Mets? Why are the Mets?
You were the smart one.
But like,
I totally thought that it could have been a 5-year period because for me, I'm like, okay, a $2.6 billion deal was probably complicated. That
you have to go to a lot of ATMs to get to that much.
Seriously.
They all have like a $400 limit. You're just running around all day long.
Ugh. So yeah, it made sense to me that it would take 5 years to find an ATM where you can hit the 2 point. Wasn't there a Simpsons where he had a $1 trillion bill? Like, where's that? Where's Mr. Burns when you need him with his $1 trillion bill?
Yep, that's about on brand. I hope that, because another thing that's happened since we last recorded, which it makes this feel like eons ago, I guess it's eons ago in like weird Mets time because the Mets can't stop Metsing, is that like Luis Rojas was hired as the new manager, the new Mets
Who
manager.
Who seems wonderful.
He does. Yeah.
The poor
credit
man.
Credit where it's due.
They might have backed into something here.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, for the Mets to have, and I will still give them credit for what I think was a good process the first time around with Beltran. For the Mets to have two consecutive good hiring processes seems like maybe we should all go out and buy lottery tickets today. Mm. Because that, I will give them, I think, fine. All right, we get one. Check.
I mean, but was it them, though? Because apparently, like, Pete really pushed for it. And, like, a couple other players, like, really pushed for Rojas, so...
Hey, look, they got where they needed to go.
True.
We will raise that hired a decent manager pennant sky high.
Next to the 2016 banner.
And I hope, based on the fact that, obviously, like, we all know now that... The reason that this Cohen deal fell apart is because of the Wilpons' insatiable desire to micromanage at all times. I hope now, in case that wasn't already abundantly clear to Luis Rojas, it is abundantly clear now that he's going to have absolutely no independence whatsoever in his ability to manage.
I mean, at least he's been around the team for a while, and he probably already knew that.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't imagine he's going into this blind.
Yep, so...
But, hey, Noah Syndergaard was happy. Stroman was happy.
Yeah, the players seemed to really like him.
He was happy. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. And he seems like a good human. So that's nice. But, yeah, I mean, like Maggie said, I'm just so desperate for, like, actual baseball at this point. I'm just so tired. All I want to do is watch baseball. And at least pitchers and catchers report next week. So, that's
yay!
Good.
So, we're close.
So I've accidentally, well, I didn't accidentally watch, but a few weeks ago, the J.D. Davis walk-off against the Indians was on, so of course I had to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, it was, I mean, my TV just happened to be on SNY at the time. I don't know how that happened.
My finger slipped on the remote and,
Oh, geez, and now the battery died, so I can't change the channel, darn. But it was fun to watch because obviously I love JD, I love the Mets, and it was baseball in the middle of winter. But then it also hurts because then that game goes off and there's no more baseball after it. So it's like you got that little taste and then it just kind of made you want more and there is no more.
Yeah. The one good thing that did happen. We'll
get there. We'll make it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. We're so close. The one good thing that did happen this week is that Jacob DeGrom was named baseball's best pitcher by MLB Network. So that's something.
Did Yay. They jinx Yay. It?
I hope not.
That's where my mind goes. Like, that's a jinx.
Yeah. I mean,
it's Mads.
We've been permanently
But I believe in
damaged.
Jake. I believe in you. I think Jake's like Mets immune kind of. Uh-oh, I better. I just knocked on wood.
You just said that out loud into the world.
I did. I'm knocking on wood again. I'm sorry, Jake. It's all my fault if anything happens.
I mean, you are kind of right, though, because even the one time we thought, like, everything was over because we thought he was hurt, it wasn't actually that bad.
Yes. Around Easter, I remember, like, being like, just cancel Easter. This is awful.
Yeah, but then he rose again.
He did.
An Easter miracle.
Our savior, our Mets savior, rose again.
He is risen. By he, I mean Jacob DeGrom.
Well, did you see? Oh, I forget who it was. I want to say maybe it was Mets Booth on Christmas. They tweeted a picture of their nativity scene, and they have in place of one of the three wise men. It was the Jacob DeGrom Cy Young bobblehead.
That's
pretty. Pretty amazing.
So, you know, I thought it looked pretty good.
But that
so
just makes
know.
Me think about the Cy Young hat that's now going around. Have you guys seen that?
What Cy Young hat? No. Oh, wait. No, the ugly hat, the Macy's hat.
Yeah, the really bad, like, image of Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, yes. The, like, cursed cartoon image.
Yeah, it's, like, the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, that's a nightmare in Doosing.
Yeah, and all of them were. It wasn't just his, although his was, like, kind of particularly bad.
Yeah, I think there was Trout, Granky, Judge.
I mean, they all looked like monsters under your bed. Like, absolute, like, creatures from the Black Lagoon. But I feel like the gap between between DeGrom's actual appearance and his hat appearance was exceptionally wide.
Yes.
Yeah, how can you take somebody so handsome and make him look like that?
Everyone kept making Jerry Seinfeld jokes because they thought he looked like Seinfeld, which kind of did look like Seinfeld.
Yeah, either Jerry Seinfeld or Jason Vargas. It looked like somebody combined the two of them and then squished the face in. Yeah, and then that's what they got. And then plus he had, like, lizard eyes.
Yeah, it was creepy as hell.
It was. It made no sense. Like, did they even have a picture of Jacob DeGrom when they made that?
I don't know.
It just seemed, like, ill-conceived from the get-go. Yeah. Like, were people really clamoring for hats with embroidered images of preferred players? Was that?
Was
like,
that really?
Did that come up in the focus group? It just doesn't seem necessary.
Yeah, like, I was, like, looking in to see what hats they had because I wanted to see if they had a new floral hat. But there was, like, a $500 Noah Syndergaard hat, like, made out of a jersey. It's like, who would buy this?
Steve Cohen has some money to burn, I hear.
Yeah, right.
That's true. So he could buy, like, a jersey Noah Syndergaard hat. But nobody else is buying that.
Ill-conceived hats seem to be a theme of the day. Have you guys seen the new spring training hats? They're dreadful.
Where they like merge the two different logos for each team.
Oh, it's so bad. It only works for like two of them.
What was the pizza one? What was the one that had like pizzas and like cheesesteaks on them too?
Oh, there were also those. Yeah. Those were like the, they had like a really funny name too for the hats. It was like team design hats or like team concept hats. And I was like, what the hell is happening?
And it wasn't even like the Mets and Yankees and Knicks all had the same hat. And it was like, but why?
Oh, it's like, team describe. New era team describe hats. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, they wanted food on them, but then we got an apple. Like, shouldn't have been a bagel or like, I don't know.
And the Mets and Yankees something were the same.
Pizza? No, I think Chicago got pizza.
What?
Dumb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Y'all, this is just more than I have to spend right now. At dawn, we riot. Anger in my heart about this one.
At dawn, we riot. I can't.
Oh, wait, I found the Noah Syndergaard hat. $499.99. Cool. Noah Syndergaard, New York Mets, New Era Player Authentic Jersey, Snapback Adjustable Cap.
There are just so many words there, and I can't possibly keep track of them all. It's like,
well, you get
like midnight. I'm dying here.
Future dollars for dingers raffle item.
I will raffle off anything anybody gives us. I am not above any kind of hideous piece of garbage hat for our.
We will raffle off garbage.
This is garbage that I once dropped in the same building as Jacob DeGrom.
Excellent.
That's a hot dog wrapper. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Sure is. Please give me money.
It's going to a good cause, we swear.
Yep. Yeah, I think that about does it for Mets related stuff. But before we move on to general baseball segment, I just wanted to remind folks that in a few weeks, on February 24th, 25th, which day is the Tuesday? 25th. February 25th, we are doing a book podcast and we are doing Baseball Maverick. So get reading. And we will be discussing Baseball Maverick on the podcast. Get excited. So that's coming up for you soon. But in the meantime, we are going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to do sort of a hodgepodge baseball segment with various issues to cover, so stay tuned.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link, so you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And we are back. So usually for these second half segments, we have like generalized themes for social justice issues in baseball, or like something big has happened that we need to talk about because it falls within the purview of this podcast. This week it's kind of just been like a hodgepodge of various news items that we just kind of want to do like a rapid fire touch on, because like a whole bunch of stuff has happened, but not like major things, just like things we want to touch on. So the first one of these, which is probably the biggest story in sports right now, not baseball, strictly baseball related, but sports, and it touches on a lot of the things that this podcast cares about. And we had sort of a debate about whether we were going to talk about Kobe Bryant on the podcast, because obviously this is a baseball podcast and not a basketball podcast, and we weren't sure whether we were the right voices for it, but we decided that it was too big of a story to simply ignore, but we're not going to have a whole segment about it. Instead, we are going to direct you guys to some writing on the topic. So in case you guys haven't read Bradford William Davis's piece on Kobe Bryant, it's at the New York Daily News. It's titled "The Lasting Effects of Kobe Bryant's Rape Case." It's an excellent piece, and obviously Bradford is a friend of the pod, and we are huge fans of his. So you should go check that out. Obviously, Bradford isn't the only person that's done really good writing on this topic and treated it with the nuance it deserves, because obviously Kobe Bryant is a big figure, but also a complicated one. So you guys should check that out. And if you have any recommendations for writing that you've seen on Kobe Bryant that you've really enjoyed and you thought treated the topic with a lot of nuance, feel free to tweet it at us, shoot it our way. We'd love to amplify those stories, but we just felt like we weren't the right, you know, venue for, an extensive Kobe Bryant discussion. But obviously we, you know, are monitoring that, and it's a big deal in the sports world, obviously. So, yeah. Do either of you two have anything to say about that?
I guess I would just add that, like, I mean, this was an enormous loss in so many ways. And I, you know, you always look for, you know, not like bright sides, because that's just like ghoulish and weird, but like, something to come out of this. And I've just been blown away by the quality of the writing and the thoughtfulness and the nuance that so many people, like Bradford obviously, but many, many others have brought to this, and writing about Kobe from a really complicated perspective and a really like balanced perspective. And, you know, the writing about his daughter, it's a time that makes me really proud to be sort of a tangential part of the sports writing world, because I think just the amazing talent that has come out of talking about this much better than we could is something that I've just really been impressed with and proud of.
Yeah. I have to agree about that too. And I think it was Molly Knight. She wrote an article just focusing on Gianna,
yeah,
and what she accomplished. Yeah, so, and just, you know, it was a tragedy beyond just Kobe Bryant too, and there were three kids, and, you know, they were young, and so I think we can't just focus on, yeah, obviously he was this monumental figure, but there are a lot of families grieving that, you know, I don't want them getting pushed aside either. And like a whole family. And there is, you know, two kids are orphans now because their mom, dad, and sister died. So, and I think from what I've seen, there has been a lot of focus on them too, that they weren't just seven others. It was the Altobellis, you know, so they deserve, they had lives too. They were people, they were here, they touched lives, maybe not as many, but they had stories to tell too. So, yeah, and I have seen a lot of focus go on them too. But so it is just something to keep in mind too, that, you know, the Bryants weren't the only one affected by this. And, you know, I don't know, there's no way to fix it. There's no way to make it better for these families, but I don't know. The only person that I saw do a really good job was Stephen Colbert, because his family died in a plane crash too, his father and two brothers, I think. And he said something needs to change, like a black box needs to be put on these things, like more safety, because the safety for helicopters is different. Like they're not as required, they don't have certain requirements that like planes do, like the black boxes and things like that. So maybe this will start a conversation about, you know, safety in helicopters. So maybe this won't happen again. So that's the only other thing I can really think of is, you know, maybe it'll be a wake up call so this doesn't happen to other families.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also hope that this, you know, starts a conversation about, and I mean, this isn't the first time that this has come up, but it's a prominent one. I hope that there is more discourse surrounding news outlets valuing being first over being accurate.
Yes.
And journalistic integrity. Because, like, again, kids were involved. These were children. And we're tweeting out these things before we even know what happened. And I think that's irresponsible.
In some cases, And even in cases where they were right, it doesn't mean that, you know, like the police couldn't confirm who had been killed because, like, they were children and their parents hadn't been told. Like it was, families had not yet been informed. And, like, I understand that a lot of news is, like, kind of a need-to-know thing. This didn't need to be known on that level of detail. You know, this isn't something that, like, we didn't need to hear that so-and-so was possibly among those killed because it wasn't valuable information for us in that moment. That it should have been left to let the families know. Everybody could have waited.
Yep.
Yeah. And, like, if you knew that was Kobe's helicopter that went down, okay. Like, I'm sure Vanessa knew. But if you're one of the family members that had, like, you know your family is on a helicopter with Kobe Bryant. Like, that's not something that escapes your attention. So even if the police were able to notify the Bryants and then that got out, you're still going to know before the police tell you because you're going to know your family is with Kobe.
Yeah.
So that's how you find out, is like through a tweet or through breaking news on the television. So it's not just, like I said, it's just not about the Bryants. Like, even if they knew, I don't think all the other families did at that point.
Right. Yeah.
And also they reported that Rick Fox was on the helicopter too. And he had to start telling people I'm alive, like, because he was already grieving because he found out his friend died. But then he said, like, this just compounded it, that, you know, people would burst into tears when he texted them back or, like, called them saying, oh, my God, you're actually alive. So he had to, like, calm down his friends while he was trying to process his friend dying at the same time. So, like, what's the point of being first? Is it clout? Like, does it get you more money? But is that important at this time? Like, I don't get what the point of being first is.
Yeah. It's just the, like, immediate gratification Twitter world we live in, unfortunately.
But, like, being first on Twitter get you more money? Does it get you more followers? Does it get you more clout, I guess? But in the end, what difference does it make? Because somebody else is just going to go to their source and be like, hey, can you confirm this for me? And then they're going to have it like 2 seconds later. So yeah. Can you just not wait the 2 seconds for somebody else to confirm it or like retweet it? So I don't know. It seems pointless that, you know, how fast you get it is kind of more important now than how accurate you are. Like, accuracy is second, it seems.
Yep. It's unfortunate.
And that's what you see with, like, you know, with even, like, in the baseball world. Like,
yep, that's why Wilmer Flores was crying on the field.
Yes! We saw this! We literally witnessed this in real time!
Yep.
So, like, and there's human consequences to it. So, and it's probably not going to stop. I don't think anything's going to change, but, you know, can you think twice before you send the tweet saying, hey, maybe a grieving family is going to see this, but I don't know if anybody cares.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, just feel as far as like I said, check out Bradford's piece, and others about, you know, Kobe Bryant's legacy and what that means to various different people, and the different communities that this affects and potentially re-traumatizes. As a non-basketball fan who isn't part of the affected communities here, I didn't feel like I could speak to that, you know, with any sort of authority. So I would just rather you guys read what other people who are much smarter and more well-informed about all of this than I am and have much better takes on it than me. I would rather you just read what they have to say. So, but obviously a very, like, nuanced, complex, upsetting, all the emotions, day for a lot of, folks who grew up watching Kobe Bryant, and obviously all of the families that are affected by this very upsetting tragedy. So, but our other news story, major news story in baseball, involves someone named Bryant as well. So Chris Bryant lost his grievance with the Cubs. So the Cubs won the case against Chris Bryant. So now he has an additional year until he's a free agent because the Cubs manipulated his service time and Major League Baseball decided that that was cool. And so now he'll also probably be traded.
Yeah, because now that ups his trade value because now you have him under control for another year.
Yep. So, yeah, that's really bad. It's not really good news for the sport. It sets a pretty bad precedent. And the state of labor, it sets a bad, like, omen for the state of labor relations in the game. And the fact that, like, you know, a lot of people talked about, like, the fact that free agency was much better this offseason, which is absolutely true. But I feel like people like oversimplified it and made it seem like the sport is fixed because of that. But we're talking about Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, and Mookie Betts all probably being traded before opening day. And that's really messed up.
Yeah. And the Red Sox really aren't that far away from contending. Like, yeah, okay, you can make the argument they're kind of a disaster right now because of, you know, their coaching situation and stuff.
They won the World Series two years ago.
Yep. How much turnover has there been from 2 years ago? And, you know, everybody who wanted Chaim Bloom as your GM. This is what you would have gotten if they had hired him.
Yep, Jacob DeGrom would have been traded, you guys.
Yep.
Would have been traded. Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. And I prefer my Jacob DeGrom. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And even, like, even the Rockies, who I guess you could make, like, the strongest argument for trading their star player because of those three teams of the Cubs, Red Sox, and Rockies, I would say they're probably the furthest away from a contending roster as things are currently constructed. However, I think there is almost no scenario. I won't say no. I won't say 0%. But there's almost no scenario where trading your franchise player is the correct move, in my view.
Yeah, just for the PR nightmare.
Well, they're never going to get back, you know, players who will give equivalent boost to their performance. Like, you don't trade Nolan Arenado for the next Nolan Arenado. You trade him for, like, I don't know, probably the next, I can't think of any Rockies players. This is
Trevor Story.
That says a lot.
You hope
you'll get the next Trevor.
Yeah, that's
Story.
The best outcome.
And, like, that's just, you know, you get a whole bevy of prospects, and most of them will not ever play for the major leagues or will play just very little. And, like, I mean, you're really, it's just about clearing payroll and about hopefully being better somewhere down the line. And, like, that's not, you're never going to upgrade from Nolan Arenado. That's not how a trade of your franchise player works.
No. And was it their owner or was it their GM who just said he's promising they're going to win 94 games this year?
Yep, it was the owner.
You haven't added. Okay, so it was the owner. They haven't signed a single free agent. You won 71 games last year. Where are those extra 20 wins coming from? Can you point? Can you point to tell me?
Brody Van Wagenen school of
that's true
prognosticating.
True. But, like, you're still in a division with the Dodgers. I like, how can people say this with a straight face and think the fans are going to buy it? Just the audacity of the owners. Like, oh, in the end, because I said it, that's gonna make it true. No, we're not stupid.
Yeah.
Especially if you trade Arenado, then definitely where are those 20 wins coming from?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. It's upsetting that these franchises who, like, you know, there's no reason why they can't just, like, build a competitive ball club around their stars.
Oh, wait. Just got breaking news alert.
Oh, no.
The Red Sox have traded Mookie Betts to the Dodgers.
Oh, my God. To who?
The Dodgers.
That was the team that they thought was going to get Mookie Betts, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, because the Dodgers are the only team in MLB actually trying to win.
Is it the Verdugo-like package? What's the, do we know?
It's Mookie Betts and David Price.
And David Price?
Yeah.
Well, because they don't want to pay him.
No, yeah, it's about shedding payroll. It doesn't say who's going the other way. It just says Red Sox trading Mookie Betts and David Price. Pending medical reviews.
This sucks.
So, yep, there's Heim Bloom working his cutting payroll magic.
I think it just makes it harder to build fandoms and I know everybody's like, and yes, you vote for the name in the front of the jersey, root for the name in the front of the jersey, not the name on the back. But also, it's good to care about people. It's fun to care about people.
For the Wilpons. I'm cheering for Pete Alonso, and my loyalty is going to be to Pete Alonso and Jacob deGrom because I hate you, the Wilpons, and you're ruining
the big... Yeah. Third unidentified team is indeed part of Red Sox Dodgers blockbuster, sources tell me. Three team trades, spicy.
Ooh. There haven't been a lot of threesomes in MLB trades in a while, it feels like. Yeah, spicy. I heard it. I know what I said.
It's spicy, but I'm sad.
I know. Why can't the Red Sox have Mookie Betts? We had David Wright. When times were tough, we still had David Wright to cheer for.
Yeah.
And, I loved him for that. He was the reason to tune in. And, if every team says you're too expensive, goodbye, how are you going to keep a loyal fan base that way when the times are tough?
I don't say this lightly as a Mets fan, but the Red Sox should be ashamed of themselves.
Yes.
Shameful. It's shameful.
And they're going to use the scandal as an excuse. They were always planning on doing this.
Oh, yeah, they were going to do this anyway.
As soon as they hired Heim Bloom, it was a foregone conclusion that this was going to happen.
Yep. So that's unfortunate. There's going to be a strike, everyone. Get ready. It's going to be awesome. But that said, speaking of things being shameful, even though the Mets are usually shameful, I feel like a thing on this podcast that is important to do is to point out the times when the Mets are not shameful and give credit where credit is due when the Mets do deserve credit. So we wanted to give a quick shout out to Robinson Cano and Ahmed Rosario and Luis Rojas and all of the other folks from across the league. It wasn't just those people, but those are the Mets adjacent people involved. Juan Soto was involved, Gene Segura, Marcelo Osuna, and others. But there was a march in the Dominican Republic for activists in order to end violence against women. And obviously that is an issue that is near and dear to the heart of this podcast. So we just wanted to shout Cano and Rosario and Rojas and the other players and managers from around the league that were involved in that effort. So, yeah, good on them. That's good.
Yeah. Like we said, it has to come from their peers. Being suspended and then getting traded to a team where you can win a World Series is not exactly a punishment. But if your peers speak out and shame you, that carries a lot of weight. So, I was very impressed that they did this, and you know what? Good for them. And I hope it's something that continues.
Yeah. A+. Thank you.
Thank you, Mets. So again, with our round robin theme for the week, we have kind of one last point. We're a multi-sport podcast this week, so we've covered basketball a little bit, a lot of baseball stuff, but we're going to touch on football as well. So I am an ill-informed. I do not know anything about football. Like, I know that the Super Bowl happened. I know what two teams were in it. I know which team won. That's all I know. I didn't watch any of it. That said, I thought it was important to mention the Super Bowl because I saw a lot of parallels between the discourse that went on surrounding, because obviously one of the two teams involved in the Super Bowl was the Kansas City Chiefs, and they do the tomahawk chop just like the Atlanta baseball team does. And so there was a discourse very similar to when Atlanta was in the playoffs about using the tomahawk chop and other Native American imagery, you know, for sports. Which I thought the discourse was generally, like, it's good that it's coming to light, but, you know, unlike, at least in the baseball context, like, a player spoke up and said something, and, like, something nominally was done. Doesn't seem like anything, you know, got done in the football arena there.
No, football culture is beyond toxic. Yeah. I don't think anything will ever change.
I'm not crossing my fingers.
Yeah, like,
but like we said, the tomahawk chop isn't unique. Obviously another team does it, so it's not your thing. So why can't you change it and make it something that's not offensive and make it something that's yours?
Because they don't care.
Yeah, true.
And but I obviously saw a lot of tweets about the Kansas City Chiefs being, you know, the name and the tomahawk chop being bad, which is all true and important. But I think it's worth noting that, like, the other team that was in the Super Bowl was the 49ers, and the 49ers are named after, like, gold prospectors.
Yes.
And that entire, like, culture is based on, like, Manifest Destiny. So that's, like, also not great, just so everyone knows. Like, probably the lesser of the two evils, but, like, not by a lot.
Yeah, it's all bad.
It's all bad.
Can't we just have, like, teams named after animals? Like, can't that be the thing?
Metropolitans or is pretty...
Yeah, I was gonna say funny little old-timey words for city dwellers.
Yankees.
Knickerbockers.
Knickerbockers.
Yeah, like, that's all very fun.
Yeah, it's harmless, I think.
All teams must now be named after animals or different types of underwear. I don't make the rules.
The briefs.
And I just, I do want to use the privilege I have of this platform to say something else about the Super Bowl, which is that I saw some selective outrage that, like, made me kind of pissed off about the halftime show. And people were mad about the provocativeness of the halftime show. And I just want to say, like, that's the thing you're choosing to be mad about. Like, you're choosing to be mad about, like, J-Lo and Shakira showing off their, like, fantastic bodies. Like, if I look like that at age 50, you best believe I am walking around with, like, no clothes on at all times, first of all. Second of all, like, we just talked about
also,
how toxic...
Shakira, call me.
Yeah, seriously.
That's it. Just call me.
Just call me.
I was mostly outraged that she did not sing "Try Everything" from Zootopia.
From Zootopia,
because
that
song is so catchy.
It's so good. Yeah, and
it's
she wore
so
almost
good.
The same outfit.
She wore the outfit.
Like, come on, man.
It was right there.
Right there. Low-hanging fruit. But, yeah, like... That's the thing you're choosing to be mad about. We just talked about how like toxic the whole culture of football is. And if you want to, like, you know, get on your, like, feminist soapbox about, like, how pole dancing is degrading to women somehow, like, how about how the NFL doesn't give a shit about domestic violence? And, like, how about how these men are, like, damaging their brains for your entertainment and, like, things like that? Like, there are more things in football to be mad about than, like, Shakira not wearing enough clothes for your liking. Like, come on now.
Like, one of the most, like, you're pretending there's, like, cheerleaders don't exist. Like, there, have you seen what they're wearing on the sidelines?
And they don't get paid. Like,
and there's nothing wrong with that.
Like, and they're mistreated.
Not getting paid is a problem. But there's also, you know what? There's nothing wrong with what cheerleaders are wearing either. Like, that's, you know, it's not... It's not that we should be telling all women what they should be putting on their bodies when they dance. It's that we should be telling none of them.
Right.
And at least these women are getting paid for their talents, as cheerleaders should as well. But that's another that's another conversation.
If you want to make an argument about cheerleaders like being in like being exploited because they don't make any money for what they do, then yeah, that's valid. But like Shakira and J-Lo are not being exploited; they're rich.
Like, we should all be exploited as J-Lo is.
And like, I don't know, to me, like, again, I might not be the right person to say this, but there are other people whose voices who you should look to talk about this. But I will say is, if you take in this whole spectacle and the thing you are choosing to be selectively angry about is policing Latinx bodies, that you should probably like reevaluate your priorities. That's all I'll say about that. So yeah, that
well, no, so we probably should just shout out that Pat Mahomes' son won.
Yes, Pat Mahomes.
That was kind of the Mets won the Super Bowl.
Mets legend.
Where
Pat
we
Mahomes.
Did it.
Yeah, definitely cool thing. Definitely a cool thing.
Yeah. Congratulations to the Mahomes family.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So thus concludes our multi-sport segment. I hope you enjoyed it. We probably won't do this all that often. At least I can only speak for myself, but like I don't know enough about other sports to talk about other sports all that much. So enjoy this treat where I said football and basketball words very briefly. But yeah, in the meantime, we are just waiting for spring training to start, and it starts very soon. And we will, when we get back, we will do walk-off wins, so stay tuned for that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we will end the show this week like we do every week with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what's making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So I have a rare congratulations for the Mets, because my walk-off win is their fan fest that they held. I guess it was like a week and a half ago now. I don't know what time is anymore. But
it's a flat circle. It was, is what it is.
I am so jealous of you.
They did
so
a
fun.
Wonderful job. Like, it was, I mean, there were little logistical things that need to be fixed. And there were some, they will say there were definitely some issues with accessibility that there's just no excuse for. But, you know, that's an easy fix. Throw up some maps around so that you could figure out where you're going. But like, they really decked out the joint. You had a chance to explore the stadium in a really new way. And there were just players everywhere, like big players, important players that were just hanging around, just like ready to shake hands and take pictures. Like we ran into, and this was the best part, we ran into Robinson Cano just waiting for an elevator.
Oh,
and he took a picture with my son, who adores Robinson Cano, because he saw his picture on a train. So to him, like,
oh yeah, everything connected
that
to
is,
the train.
I mean, someday he will ask me, Mommy, why did I decide Robinson Cano was my favorite player? And I will have to tell him. But then that's also, you know, the reason that Daryl Strawberry was my favorite player when I was growing up is because his name was a food. So,
yes,
like,
that was the reason why he was my favorite,
it's
too.
It's the right reason.
But
it was just, it was an awesome afternoon. And, like, I am so excited to do it again. It really amped us all up for the season. And it's the kind of thing that, like Tommy will never forget meeting Robinson Cano. That is a... He is a fan for life. And I want to applaud the Mets, the whole team that planned that out, that made it happen. They really, for once, didn't half-ass something. And it paid off big time. And we just had an awesome time. So, yay, Mets Fan Fest.
yeah. From everything that I've heard, like, all the players were really nice and friendly. Yeah. And so, like, so I'm happy that to hear that, too, because they all seem like really good dudes that are easy to root for.
Yeah, they were really just all, and they were just all in good moods, so you kind of get the sense that they weren't, like, being dragged around or anything. It was, yeah, whatever they did, whatever was in the water that day, good job.
Yeah, and we talk a lot on this podcast about, like, Major League Baseball, like, doing the right thing to market its players and doing the right thing to expand its audience. Like, this is the type of stuff you do. Like, this is the right thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of
sad. And you want to talk about, again, like, that's how you build fan bases.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you market to young people. This. Getting to, like, hang out with Robinson Cano is, like, the coolest thing for a kid. It's the coolest thing for me, too, but let's be real.
Yeah.
I'm not the audience for this, necessarily. But, like, it's the coolest thing for a kid ever.
Well, yeah. Even Vaz, who writes for us, he was online to meet J.D. Davis. He's like, Linda, is there anything you want me to tell him? I'm like, tell him he brings joy.
Oh.
So Vaz said he told him that, and he said he was very appreciative. I'm like, thank you. It was very
That's
important
so heavy.
That he knows that. So I'm like, I'm kind of ecstatic that, like, through Vaz, J.D. Davis knows he brings joy. I was like, thank you. You just made my day. It's like I met him.
Our son Bear.
We do love our son, Mir, and I'm glad he's still here.
Yeah. Linda, what's your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I'm just going to complete the sport. It's not a trifecta. What's four? I don't know. It's kind of late.
Isn't it a hat trick?
Hat trick is three also.
Two.
Quadrangle. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll just go with quadrangle.
Sports quadrangle.
Sports square. I don't know. But I went to my first Rangers game of the season. Friday. And I've been dying because I really wanted to go see them this year because they're still bad, but they're rebuilding. My heart's kind of broken a little bit because they brought their goalie up. So now Henrik Lundqvist is kind of being forced out the door.
He's the only one who I know.
I know. Same. They have this new hotshot, young kid who's just unbelievable. Like, he's only lost, like...
I like hotshots, damn it.
I know. And he's, like he's only lost, like, 13 times in his entire career. Like, he's legitimately good. So he got the start, so I got to see, and he's a really cute puppy, too. It's the cutest damn puppy on Instagram. So that kind of swayed me over, too. So I got to see Igor start, and so I got to see him. They played the Red Wings, who are awful, so the Rangers played well, from what I can tell. Like, you know that we all wait for the sound of, like, the crack of the bat and the gloves popping. Like, walking into Madison Square Garden and hearing all, like, the pucks hit the wall. It's like, oh, I'm home. I miss this sound. And so, Allison, we still have to get you to a game.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah, because it is, like, Artemi Panarin for, like, the Mets equivalent would be, like, if the Mets signed Machado. Like, the Rangers decided to actually sign good players, which was fun. So Panarin's unbelievable, and
wait,
just
he's
to
the
see
the other one I know Lundqvist and the bread man because of Slack.
Yeah, the bread man. Yes.
Oh, I will now know the bread man. I love bread.
Yes. So the bread man is like TV sells him short. Like, to see him play in person, this is the first time I've ever seen him play in person. It was just fantastic to see what he could do on ice, like, in person, up close. So I was very happy, even though my heart breaks a little bit for Lundqvist, because I don't know. His jersey's probably going in the rafters too, because I have this thing where all the players, like, their jerseys that I bought are, like, now retired. Eli Manning, David Wright. Like, I
hate to tell you this, Linda. It's because you're getting old.
No.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to have to be the one to tell you, but the map.
These are all the players I grew up with, and they're all leaving me. But yeah, if you think about it, Eli, Henrik, and Dave probably all didn't come into their sports around the same time.
Yeah,
so we aren't getting old. I got like a jersey ceremony where I like retire their numbers to the rafters, like raise their jerseys to the roof of my house.
Yeah, the flagpoles.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Henrik. Yeah. There's a new prince in town, but I did have fun, and you know, I'll probably go back and maybe drag Allison with me.
Yep, why not? I'll go.
It's not cold. I was okay. I took my jacket off and I was comfortable. So you won't freeze, I promise.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. So my walk-off win is usually I focus on like one nice weekend activity I had, but I can't keep it to just one this time because I had two really good weekends in a row, which I'm lucky enough to have had. A couple weekends ago, I was in New York and visiting my friend for the weekend, my best friend from college, and she and I went to see To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway, and it was wonderful. Ed Harris was Atticus Finch, and I thought he did a fantastic job. The whole cast did a wonderful job. To Kill a Mockingbird is one of my favorite books ever. And so to see it like performed on stage was just, it made me so emotional to go back to, you know, the first time I read it. It made me feel like how I felt the first time I read the book. And it was just like so beautiful and poignant and so well acted. And I really enjoyed it. And after the show, we went to Marie's Crisis Cafe, which I had never been to, which is a famous piano bar in the Village where they only do show tunes. So, of course, we were like among our people, belting Broadway numbers at the top of our lungs. You know, it was so much fun. I had a blast. That's like the most fun I've ever had out in New York, like in my life. And it was great. So, yeah, it was just a fantastic weekend in New York. And then we had brunch the next day. It was just wonderful. And then this past weekend, I went down to Baltimore. So on Thursday and Friday of last week, I had a 2-day meeting in Maryland for work. So it was convenient for me to just pop on over to Baltimore after my meeting got out on Friday. And I got to see all my friends from my lab at Hopkins and my old boss from Hopkins, and got to see all my like Hopkins friends, which was really nice because I haven't seen them since I moved away. And then I got to hang out with my dog, of course, all weekend.
Cricket.
We cuddled all weekend. She slept with me on the couch and it was the best. I miss my dog so much, but it was nice to get a full weekend of her going on lots of long walks and lots of pets and cuddles. So that was wonderful. And we got to go to a grand opening of a new brewery in the city, literally a block from where I used to live. And I was like, come on. Like, really? You're waiting till now to open this brewery till after I move? Like, I could have kept this place afloat by myself. But I'm still really happy that it opened. It's taken a really long time for this particular brewery to open. Like, I knew about it before I moved from Baltimore, and I moved, like, 8 months ago. So I knew this brewery was, like, in the works. They restored an old church and made it into a brewery. And, like, all the church stuff is, like, still intact. Like, all the, like, statues and, like, paintings on the walls and everything. All the stained glass. It's, like, absolutely gorgeous inside. And so, yeah, and it was totally packed for their opening weekend. It's called Ministry of Brewing. very fitting name for the venue. And so, yeah, it was just fantastic. Got to try a new brewery right in the neighborhood where I used to live. So it was just really cool. Got to reunite with some old friends, including the roommate I lived with in grad school, and a couple of other really close friends of mine that live in Baltimore and the surrounding area. So that was just really, really nice. Weekend back in Baltimore made me happy. So that's my walk-off win. So yeah, while you're waiting for spring training games to finally start, while you're waiting for those sweet, sweet suns out, guns out pictures of pitchers and catchers reporting, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. Right now we're doing our One Last Move series, where a bunch of us writers each write about one last player that the Mets should sign, to round out their roster. Maggie, unfortunately, got cabbaged.
Sorry, that's Maggie. Fine. Yep. I got cabbaged 2 days later.
I mean, it was like literally, like I hit the submit button, and I think this came down an hour. It might have been an hour and a half. It was not more than 2 hours that the player that I had written about was signed. So that's fine. It's fine. Yep. It's fine. So
you
it's
won
fine.
The first cabbage of 2020.
It's true.
Yay. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. That's not better.
Cabbage, someone, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say the cabbage comes for us all.
It does. Yeah. So Linda kind of got like belatedly cabbaged. Like her piece made it out, but then Wilmer Flores just got signed today. Yeah. So that was her player. I did not get cabbaged yet. My player was Russell Martin because the Mets should probably sign a backup catcher. But yeah, anyway, a bunch of us writers have each written about one player, kind of a low-key move that the Mets could do to improve their roster. So check that out. Our prospect lists are all out, so you can check that out from our fantastic prospect team. All sorts of spring training-related content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can also please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. It really helps people find the show. Original music for the intro and the outro to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.